All right, so we're concluding the series this week on witnessing, inviting people to come to church. That means from next week, you don't have to do it anymore, okay? The series is over. All right, everybody who's going to get saved is now saved. How many say it's just beginning? All right, just beginning. So today I want to conclude with something that you're going to run into quite often when you do invite someone to church, and that is atheism or evolution. These are type of something that you probably encounter. So, you know, what happens when you invite somebody to church and they go, well, I'm an atheist? So first thing you do is don't panic. Because, you see, you've had an experience with God that no unbeliever, no unsafe person has had, and they can't talk you out of it, right? It's something that is so deep in you because you know that you know what you were, who you are now, and what God has done for you. So don't panic about it. They can't disprove it. But what is an atheist? An atheist simply is somebody who denies the existence of God, period. That's it. Just there's no God, doesn't exist. Along with that thought, they usually are evolutionists, which believe that everything just evolved. So those are the two things that we're going to look at today. And we as Christians believe the Bible version of creation, right in the beginning, Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So I'm going to give you six rather simple things that you can counter or talk about to a person who happens to say they're an atheist or they believe in evolution. Okay? So I'm going to try and simplify it so that you can actually remember these things when you go out and try and use it. Because the first thing that's going to happen when you speak to somebody who says they're an atheist or evolutionist, they're going to try and quote science. And they're going to say, science has proved this, the origin of the source, and so on and so forth. And when you say that you're a Christian, what they'll do is they'll look at you like, shame. Okay, prehistoric, I understand. Religious fanatic. Yeah, that's what they're going to try and intimidate you as a Christian. They're going to make you feel bad that you believe the Bible to be true. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to watch a short video. Have the lights all the way down, please. A little video clip for you. Thank you. Here we go. All the lights down on the side as well. Thank you. All the way down.
What are these stunning discoveries that have scientists suddenly speaking of God? Well, there are three revolutionary discoveries from the fields of astronomy and molecular biology that really stand out. One, the universe had a beginning. Two, the universe is just right for life. And three, DNA coding reveals intelligence. The statements leading scientists have made about these discoveries may shock you. Let's take a look. The universe had a one-time beginning. Since the dawn of civilization, man has gazed in awe at the stars, wondering what they are and how they got there. Although on a clear night, the unaided human eye can see only about 6,000 stars, Hubble and other powerful telescopes reveal there are a billion trillion stars clustered in over 100 billion galaxies. In fact, our sun is like one grain of sand amidst the world's beaches. But prior to the 20th century, the majority of scientists believed our own Milky Way galaxy was the entire universe, and that only about 100 million stars existed. Most scientists of the past believed that our universe never had a beginning. They believed that mass, space, and energy that compose our entire universe had always existed. But in the early 20th century, astronomer Edwin Hubble discovered that the universe is expanding. Rewinding the process mathematically, he calculated that everything in the universe, including matter, energy, space, and even time itself, actually had a beginning. Well, shockwaves hit the scientific community. Many scientists, including Einstein, reacted negatively. In what Einstein later called the biggest blunder of my life, he fudged the equations to avoid the implication that the universe had a beginning. Well, perhaps the most vocal adversary of the idea that the universe had a beginning was British astronomer Sir Frederick Hoyle, who sarcastically nicknamed the creation event a Big Bang. He stubbornly held to his steady-state theory that the universe had always existed. Well, so did Einstein and other scientists, until the evidence for a beginning became overwhelming. The logical conclusion was like the proverbial elephant in the room, namely that something or someone beyond scientific investigation must have started it all. Then finally, in 1992, the COBE satellite experiments proved that the universe really did have a one-time beginning in an incredible flash of light and energy. Although some scientists called it the moment of creation, most preferred referring to it as the Big Bang.
All right, so the Big Bang has in fact been proved to be true. So this creates a problem for atheists and evolutionists, because there were two schools of thought prior to this. The one was that the universe always existed. Everybody lift your hands. Let there be light. All right, the light will come. Look at that. I need to watch what I say. All right. So either the universe always existed or there was a Big Bang. You can't have it both ways. All right. Now, if an evolutionist believes that there's a Big Bang, but nothing existed prior to that, then he or she has to believe that an exact combination of gas suddenly appeared, which resulted in an explosion so powerful as to create the entire universe. Now, the question is it plausible? Is this a rational thought that all the matter that we see, including the Earth, suddenly appeared from an explosion, and there was nothing there before it? Now, just to consider, I want you to consider the enormity of the solar system, the galaxies, and the universe. You need to understand this. So how far is the Earth from the sun? Come on, guys. Come on. Are you smarter than a fifth grader? 93 million, approximately. Why do I say approximately? Because it's actually in a sphere. So it's at some stages it's like 91.4 million miles away, and at other times it's 94.5 million miles away. But you know what the speed of light is, right? Come on. 186,000 miles per second. So how far are we away from the sun according to the traveling of light? Look, we've got some smart people in the house. Exactly 8 minutes. So it takes light only 8 minutes to get to the sun, or from the sun to us, traveling at 186,000 miles per second. Now, here's the thing. Just a tiny change in the distance, 1.07% change, and the Earth is eliminated. Either closer to the sun or further from the sun. We either burn up or we freeze up. That distance, if you calculate it out, is 100,000 miles, which is not a lot. I sold my used car to Pastor Brian when it had 100,000 miles on it. Yeah. Right? And how much does it have now? 260,000 miles. So this is quite... Whew, and they're still annoying. But your car is not even as good as Kathy, Pastor Kathy's Mustang. Yeah. Where are you, Pastor Kathy? How many miles on your Mustang? 320,000. Plug for Mustang. Plug. Okay. All right. The point is, both of their cars have traveled further than it would need for the Earth simply to move a little bit and we'd be eliminated, extinguished. That's amazing, isn't it? So, our galaxy is called the what? Milky Way. You have any idea how many stars there are in our galaxy? Boy, you guys have done your homework. Yeah. 200 billion. Right there. You know, I mean, all right. Smarty pants controlling the... And it's 200 billion stars. And guess what? Do you know how... It's going to come up real quick before it comes up, okay? All right. What is the diameter across our galaxy in light years? Ooh, for the $1,000. 100,000 light years. 100,000. Remember, light traveling at 186,000 miles a second. 186,000 miles per second will take 100,000 years just to cover our diameter of the galaxy we're in. In fact, if you thought you were the center of something, we're actually 30,000 light years away from the center of our galaxy. Talk about left out in the cold. Okay? All right. But listen, you think our galaxy is huge. Get this. There's 100 billion galaxies. 200 billion stars in ours, and there's 100 billion galaxies. And if you thought we're big, there's a galaxy called number 87. I believe it might be M87. And that is only 10 times bigger than our galaxy. So it's 980,000 light years across the diameter of that. But that's dwarfed. That's dwarfed by Hercules A. Hercules A is 1.5 million light years across this diameter. Anybody feeling big right now? Huh? But what are you thinking about God? Have you maybe been thinking that you haven't been thinking of him in big enough terms, right? Genesis 1:14, the Bible says, God speaks, he says, I command lights to appear in the sky and to separate the day from the night and to show that the times of seasons and special days and years. And Psalm 8, verse 3 says, when I look at the night sky and see the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you've set in space or in place. So I want to do a little exercise to you. I'm going to talk about, this is the second argument now, we want to talk about order from chaos. Order from chaos. So what I have is, let me show you what I've got here first of all. I have a sun. Grapefruit. I have an earth. It's a lemon. I have a moon for the earth. It's a little lime. Going to go around the earth. And then I have some planets. Oranges. We have the moon. We have three planets that are cooking. We have the earth and its moon. And then we have four more planets, like the frozen chosen. These guys are just like too far from the sun, so you guys are in trouble, freezing. Can you see this? Yeah. All right. Now, how many people believe that I could cause a big bang and have all of these things line up exactly? Oh, let's try that again. That didn't work. The sun and the moon and all over the place. The planets are just flying around. Come back, boys. We'll try you again. We'll try you again. Stay by the earth now. Stay by the earth. We need you. And don't get too close to the sun, okay? Remember that one. Put you back here. One more time. Okay, it's not working. It's not working. Okay, so I couldn't convince anybody, right, that if I have such a simple illustration here, that when the Big Bang occurred, okay, you can put them away. Thank you. Cut the oranges up for the people afterwards. Thank you. Woohoo! All right, you planet eaters. Who could logically think that a Big Bang would occur and that we would be so well positioned from the sun as to support life? And 100,000 miles closer, there'd be no life. 100,000 miles the other side, no life. Okay? Have a second video. Lights down.
Another similar statement came from agnostic George Smoot, the Nobel Prize-winning scientist in charge of the COBE experiment. He put it like this: there is no doubt that a parallel exists between the Big Bang as an event and the Christian notion of creation from nothing. Scientists who used to scoff at the Bible's account of creation are now admitting that the biblical concept of creation from nothing has been right all along. Well, cosmologists who specialize in the study of the universe and its origins soon realized that a chance cosmic explosion could never bring about life any more than a nuclear bomb would, unless it was precisely engineered to do so. And that meant a designer must have planned it. They began using words like superintellect, creator, and even supreme being to describe this designer. Why is this? Because the universe is finely tuned for life. Physicists calculated that for life to exist, gravity and the other laws of physics that govern our universe needed to be intricately tuned just right, or our universe couldn't exist. For instance, did you know that if the expansion rate of the universe had been slightly weaker, gravity would have pulled all matter back into a big crunch? We're not talking about merely a 1 or 2% reduction in the universe's expansion rate. Well, Stephen Hawking writes, if the rate of expansion 1 second after the Big Bang had been smaller by even 1 part in 100,000 million million, the universe would have recollapsed before it ever reached its present size. Well, on the flip side, if the expansion rate had been a mere fraction greater than it was, well, all galaxies, stars, and planets could never have formed, and we wouldn't be here. And for life to exist, the conditions in our solar system and our own planet also need to be just right. For example, we all realize that without an atmosphere of oxygen, none of us would be able to breathe. And without oxygen, water couldn't exist. Without water, there would be no rainfall for our crops. Other elements such as hydrogen, nitrogen, sodium, carbon, calcium, and phosphorus are also essential for life. But that alone is not all that's needed for life to exist. The size, temperature, relative proximity, and chemical makeup of our planet, sun, and moon also need to be just right. And there are dozens of other conditions that needed to be exquisitely fine-tuned, or we wouldn't be here to think about it.
All right, so let's talk about the fine-tuning. Let's complicate this solar system of ours. It's just too simple. The Big Bang and all this kind of stuff is a little simple. We all know that the Earth is orbiting around the sun, right? You know that. Okay. All right. So, but do you know that the Earth is also rotating? It is spinning. It's not just standing still. Do you know the Earth is actually rotating at 1,000 miles per hour? Okay, 1,000 miles per hour. Yeah, it takes 24 hours to turn around, 1,000 miles an hour. And then it is going around the sun. Now, it's going around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. Anybody feeling dizzy? How come you're not dizzy? How come you're not flying off into outer space? Huh? Now, it takes a year for the Earth spinning to move around this ecliptical sphere around the sun. And to complicate matters, God puts a moon out there and makes the moon turn too. Not only is the moon spinning at its own rate, it takes a day for it to turn around, but 27 days in the month it turns around, complete orbit. But it is also moving, the moon is also moving at a rate of 2,288 miles per hour. And it takes 27 days to get around the Earth. Everything is moving. Nothing is as it seems. and they stay perfectly in their orbit. And they have perpetual motion. That's an awesome thing to just happen. Right? I think, logically speaking, the rational mind has got to say, somebody created this. Now, we're faced with two questions that have to be answered. Either the Big Bang created everything that we see and know, every known molecule, every molecular structure was created, every substance known to man instantaneously was created and in perfect atomic structure, together with, at the same time, every species of flower, birds, fish, animals, everything was created at exactly the same time, or the Big Bang only began the evolutionary process. Since there was nothing before the Big Bang, then when the Big Bang happened, then the evolutionary process began after that. So you'd have to believe then that the elephant, the ant, the rose, and all these molecular structures evolved out of one amoeba. Huh. Now, you know, man, as powerful a scientific mind that we've got, and we have amazing scientific minds, we have not been able to talk our bodies into growing a third arm. And you know we all need one. How many would like to have a third? You see what I'm saying? So how come we haven't been able to force out another arm? Since we do have a mind, and we should be able to do this. But you know, if I look at flowers from my own garden, okay, isn't it beautiful? Look at this purple thing. I don't know what it is. Somebody tell me? A what? Azalea. Okay, it's one of those. All right. And look at this guy. Bird of paradise, right? And then we have this little white rose. They are so delicate. I mean, just like when they come apart. Okay? See what I'm saying? Just like that. And then something that I think just it'll grow anywhere, anytime. Bougainvillea, right? Just grows like that. And then this baby. Oh, what's pretty about you? When it comes, that's a giant bird. The flower from a giant bird of paradise, okay? And then if you go to a florist shop, yay, you get all these beautiful flowers. Okay, so here's the thing. What you want to do is just ask your evolutionist that you're talking to just go to Vons, go to the florist store, go to a nursery, or go to the fresh produce at Ralph's. And what you're going to see there is you're going to see variety, spice, fragrance. You're going to see nutrition and different sub, these products are just awesome. And every one has a different purpose for the human. Isn't that amazing? Are you telling me that the elephant and the carrot came out the same amoeba? Maybe the giraffe came out from the carrot. Maybe. I don't know. Okay, so it's obvious. It's obvious to the rational mind. It's obvious. Now, this didn't come from the same spot. So it had to be created all at one time when God did it. But here's another. The third question you have to ask is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? It's a tough one. The chicken. Somebody said chicken, right? Chicken came first. Well, see, evolutionists must answer this question. Did a perfect environment to sustain life come first, or did life, human life, come first? I ask you rational thinkers, which came first? Otherwise, man is standing around with nothing to eat. and no sun to keep him warm, and no oxygen to breathe, and no hydrogen and oxygen to drink. So the environment had to come first. Funnily enough, that's what God said. In Genesis 1:11, he said, I command the earth to produce all kinds of plants, including fruit trees and grain. And that's what happened. And remember, he didn't make man until everything was done. Right at the very end, he made man because everything was in place. Right? So here's number four. This is another thing that you can use. And it's called the evolution of the Coke. And since we have evolved, it's Diet Coke. All right, so now you understand something. Okay. Big Bang occurs, just a Big Bang, and after that's evolution. So billions of years go by, and a sticky brown substance begins to form. Oh, boy, what is this stuff? It's hot to start with, and then it cools, and it's like sweet liquid. And it has some things in it. It has sodium. It has fiber in it and artificial sweetener. And vitamin A and vitamin C and calcium and iron and all the good stuff. Zero carbs. They were kept out. Artificial color, okay? Caffeine, phosphoric acid, all of potassium, citric acid. All of these things formed. And as time went by, an aluminum can formed, and it made its way across the galaxy to where the brown source was. And when it got to the brown source fell inside it, and then a little lid came down on this thing. And voila! It only took billions of years. Oh, but wait, it's not finished yet. Oh, then some red paint fell out of the sky. And it said, Coke. Diet Coke. 16 fluid ounces. And it just waited there for man to come along and drink it. People, if it's designed, it had to have a designer. Are you listening to me? Even little Coke can didn't happen on its own. Somebody designed it. Of course, that's rational thought. Irrational thought is to say, well, it happened by chance. All right. Number five. Let's go to the human body. Just not much about the human body. Just a little bit. Take your eye. Just your eye. Just one little aspect of the human body. Do you know that there are 40 million nerve endings in the eye? 40 million. Do you know that your focus muscle, that focus so you can see and everything, focusing, do you know that moves 100,000 times a day to focus? 100,000. Focus, everybody. Focus. All right? The retina that you see through has 137 million light-sensitive cells. And God says, Psalm 139, verse 4, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Yeah, that's amazing, huh? Charles Darwin said this, and I quote, to suppose that the eye could have been formed by natural selection, which is a term used for evolution, seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. Charles Darwin, If man cannot make a human eye, which is only one part of this complicated, sophisticated human body, and to think that it happened by chance. How, I ask you, how do these most brilliant minds come up with the idea that the planet created itself or happened by chance? Now, here's another one. The human brain, just in passing, just when, you know, when Jackie had the stroke, she lost the left hemisphere of her brain. Well, all of us actually have 86 billion neurons. That's what the brain is made of. Neurons. 86 billion. Now, do you know that your neurons actually fire off? They have electronic impulses and they fly and they communicate. Do you know that? And do you know that they, each one, fires off 1,000 kilohertz per second? 1,000. Now, let me translate that into something you could understand. It's the equivalent of 40 high-definition movies streaming every second. 40 high-definition movies streaming every second. That's the brain. You ought to use it. Be a new experience for a lot of people. Genesis 2:7 said, "The Lord God formed man out of the dust of the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being." George Gallup, the famous statistician, said, "I could prove God statistically. Take the human body alone. The chance that all the functions of the individual would just happen is a statistical monstrosity. Real close to a monastery. What is he saying? Somebody had to create us, right? Somebody had to create us. Somebody had to take care of us. You know, when I think about our flowers that we have in our garden, that garden that I've got left alone would die. There is nothing in nature that does better left alone. If you don't care for it or tend for it, it dies, which would seem to indicate that nothing could evolve without somebody taking care of it. Albert Einstein said this: "Everyone who is seriously interested in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifested in the laws of the universe, a spirit vastly superior to men, and one in the face of which our modest powers must feel humble." Genesis 1:27, God created human beings in his image. That's the reason why we are so amazing. In the image of God, he created them. He created them male and female. All right, the last one I want to give you. It's called the lack of absolute knowledge. The lack of absolute knowledge. Now, the atheist says there is no God. Now, that statement is a statement, what we refer to as an absolute statement, such as, "You never help me around the house." "You never make your room. You never wash the dishes. You never say you love me." Right? "You're always late. You always keep me waiting." The moment you make a statement like that, you've made an absolute statement, and the way to reverse an absolute statement is just one time, any time, do it. Just wash the dishes once. You can never say it again. Ever. Just say, "I love you, babe. Love you, babe." And if she ever says you didn't say, "Yeah, I did. I remember 1967. I remember. Yeah, yeah. April 1st, April Fool's Day. I remember saying it." So you see, you can never come back and say that I didn't. Do you understand that? It eliminates it. It takes it out. So for someone to make the statement, "God does not exist," it means that this person has to be omniscient, which means they have to have absolute knowledge. For example, let me make a statement like this. There is no gold in China. There's no gold in China. In order for that statement to be true, then I must have searched throughout China, every mountain, every lake, every nook and cranny, under every rock. And then I come back and I say, "I've proven there's no gold in China." And then the person says, Well, how deep did you dig? Oh, I didn't dig. I just looked at the surface. Oh, didn't you know gold was under the surface? Okay, so you go back and you dig the whole of China up. You go 5 feet down and you come back and you say, I've proved it. And what's the answer going to be? It's deeper. So do you understand, in order for you to make a statement, which is an absolute statement, like there's no gold in China, you actually have to exhaust the research of China in order to make that statement. So where does that bring a person when they say there is no God, which is an absolute statement? For that to be correct, this person must be omniscient. Means they know everything. But the Bible says in Psalm 14 and verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there's no God. Not the intelligent man, the fool. The fool has said, there's no God. I remember, you know, the race to the moon and the astronauts and everything. You know, the Russians beat the Americans. You know that? Russia. We have a few Russians here. And you know what they said? You know that they rated back and said, we've been out here as astronauts. We prove there's no God. That's what they said. My answer was, step out of your capsule, you'll find him immediately. He's outside the capsule. He's not inside. Mm-hmm. Hello. He's waiting right there for you. All you do is step out your spaceship, buddy. Yeah. Okay, you see, to be omniscient, to have all knowledge, to be able to make statements like this, you've got to understand something. You have to know everything. You've got to know every hair on every single person's head. And you've got to keep up with it. And then also the color. You've got to keep up with that too. You've got to know every thought in every person's heart. You've got to know about every atom in every rock and every mineral on the face of the earth. You have to know about every star, sun, solar system, and every galaxy. But only God says that he calls the stars by name. Every star in the 100 billion galaxies, and we have 200 billion in ours, God named them. Adam, all you did was name the animals. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that the reasonable person would say, I qualify to say there's no God. I think the reasonable person, the person who at least will acknowledge that they don't know everything, will probably then turn around and say, well, you know what? Since I only have limited knowledge, I choose to believe that there's no God. Then it's a choice of faith. I choose to believe. It's not a knowledge. It's got nothing to do with science. It's what someone has chosen to believe. And you see, if you don't know whether God exists, you're no longer an atheist. You're now an agnostic. You see, because an agnostic doesn't deny the existence of God, just says his existence can't be proved. Now, I'm sure there's a higher power, but you know, you can't prove it. Well, so the agnostic is the person who looks at a building and doesn't know if someone designed and built it. And choose to believe that there was no builder, but it just happened on its own. That's an agnostic. Do you understand the problem? So, could it be that the atheist and the agnostic can't find God for the same reason a thief can't find a policeman? Mm-hmm. You see, people, if, and we believe it is, that the Bible is true, and Jesus is the Son of God, and then you owe it to yourself to decide to believe. I have one more video for you to watch.
I want to show you one last image before we respond to him together. You say, there are no more images, Louis. Thank you. It's the Son of God. crucified for my sins, there can be nothing else. Well, while I was in Durango with these students, I was just looking for something that I hadn't seen before. I was on the Hubble site searching Whirlpool images. You remember the darling of astronomy, the Whirlpool galaxy. And I just searched Whirlpool. A list of names of images came up. One of them was called the X structure at the core of the Whirlpool galaxy. Got my attention. I thought, okay. I click on that link and a photograph comes up, an image comes up on my computer screen, almost knocks me off of my seat. I cannot believe it. I'm just staring at it with my mouth open. It's 31 million light years away. The Hubble Space Telescope, seeing what we cannot see, has looked into the dark black hole core of the Whirlpool galaxy and sent us back a photograph. Here's what NASA sent us back from 31 million light years away, deep in the core of the Whirlpool galaxy. We get this image coming back to us. Wow! It's the X structure in the core of the Whirlpool galaxy. I'm not here to scientifically tell you it's a cross. You can make of it what you want to tonight. I'm just saying it reminds me of the Revelation writer who said, it's Jesus Christ, the Lamb slain before the foundation of the world. It's Jesus everywhere. It's grace everywhere you turn. It's mercy when you least expect to find it. It's God laughing in heaven when we finally got the Hubble aimed at the right place. And he goes, check this out. It's me. It's grace. It's mercy. It's kindness. It's forgiveness. Everywhere you look, it's God saying, I love you.
Every eye closed.